Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 240.
Hello, hello, this is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we accidentally turn on Fox News for like a mere, like 11 seconds, only to hear Tucker Carlson talk about how Jill and Joe Biden's affectionate behavior is a PR stunt. I am your host, Nikine Farsad, and oh my God, Tucker has a point. I hear if a QAnon person sees a couple kissing, they start believing in climate change. Today, we're actually going to talk about climate change and the Biden plan to fix it. We'll also lovingly talk about McConnell, Kinzinger, and Murdoch. And finally, we dissect types of love. Today, I'm joined by such a fantastic panel. I'm so excited by this panel. We have joining us for the very first time on this show a man you've seen on the airwaves as creator and host of Adams Ruins Everything. He is also host of the hit podcast, Factually. He's so funny. He's so prolific. Folks, it's Adam Conover. Hey, Adam.
Oh my gosh, Nikine, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So happy that we finally got you on the show. And also joining us again on the podcast, you loved her last time. She's so fabulous. You may remember her as one of the most beloved contestants on RuPaul's Drag Race. But now she has a new album that you must immediately purchase. It's called Letters to My Lovers, A Girl Like Me. And it's about a year in the life of a relationship. So I think she's going to have a lot to say about love in our last segment. She's wonderful. She's fantastic. I've been following her feed, her socials, which you should be too. She's the wonderful Peppermint. Hey, Peppermint.
Hey, gorgeous. It's great to be back.
Yeah, I'm so glad. We were in a different world last time you were on because Trump was still our president. So yes. We're now in a different.
Now his essence just looms.
His essence looms. And we'll talk about that. Okay, so let's get into it with topic number one. Okay, so wait, as we tape on this Wednesday afternoon, there are millions in Texas without power. There was a snowstorm that nobody expected. It landed in places that normally don't get it. The power grid failed on all fronts, the coal front, the natural gas front, the wind front. The grid wasn't connected to other states, so the power sources couldn't help. And blah, blah, blah. It was a real disaster, and now a bunch of people are suffering, and it sucks. And yet, we might have to expect weather events like this more and more often. Because of climate change. So I guess my first question to you both as we tape this is, do you feel like this thing in Texas, these kinds of events move the needle on like the popularity of climate change action? Adam? Well,
I think that the message is starting to get out there that climate change causes more extreme weather events, causes right. more hurricanes, causes more, you know, freak blizzards in the winter. I think that you're probably going to still have a lot of people in Texas going, hold on a second, it's cold. I thought global warming was supposed to make it warm. Isn't this the opposite?
Right, that heinous, stupid, dumb, old argument. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't been informed, right? If people haven't informed you on how it works, then it's intuitive to think that way. And it's right. only in the last like 5 years that climate scientists have realized or been able to prove that climate change leads to more extreme weather events. So now I see that in the headlines of all the mainstream news coverage about it, that this is climate change related, and that, yeah, this shows that not only are we not stopping climate change, our like basic infrastructure is unprepared to deal with it. That like a blizzard comes through and like a whole state's electric grid goes down. That's bad. And that's something we need to fix in addition to solving climate change. And I think that hopefully steps will start to be taken in that direction. I certainly hope so.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about what Biden wants to do. He wants to protect large swaths of land, create a new civilian conservation corps, deliver help to suffering coal-producing regions. And when it comes to disadvantaged communities, it might be, you know, suffering disproportionately, which I think they are in this blackout, the way the blackout has affected disadvantaged communities. He wants to create clean energy and energy efficiency projects, clean transit, affordable and sustainable housing, training and workforce development, the remediation and reduction of legacy pollution, the development of clean water infrastructure. You know, it's sort of like a laundry list of stuff that we need. It's not surprising. The goal is to be carbon neutral by 2035. And even Bill Gates, who has a new book out, not that I need to promote Bill Gates' new fucking book. Okay, the man has enough money.
I'm sure he appreciates it.
I know. You're welcome, Bill. You're so welcome. But even Bill Gates thinks like these goals are within reach. We can do it. Peppermint, do you think these kinds of events make climate change more climate change action more popular?
Well, I do think it's a little bit overwhelming for a lot of people to think of. I mean, basically, these initiatives are like it feels more attainable to like invent a time machine to go back before climate change was ever even a thing. And so right. now it's kind of like, oh, wow, there's a lot to do. You mean I'm going to have to eventually this means that the average person is going to have to give up watching TV or something like that. And so I think it's a tall order, but obviously it's very necessary. I'm one of those people that was like, you know, I hate to say I was complicit, but I was like sort of allowing in this whole situation with Texas
yeah.
and this new storm and then the next storm that's getting ready to roll through. I was kind of like, you remember that movie, The Neverending Story, where like the characters, there's this thing called the nothing, which is like negative energy.
I love how I do not know where this is going at all. Yes. Continue. Let's see how The Neverending Story relates to climate change and Texas and snowstorms.
All I'm right. sure it's all going to come together. Don't be doubtful.
I love it. No, I love it so much.
It might be a reach. It might be a reach, like some people think that Joe Biden's new policy is. But the nothing was like this negative energy,
right.
like a cloud or whatever. And so there were people who were like sort of pushing it, that evil dog that was like pushing it. But then there were people who were kind of like, I don't really know what the nothing is, but I'm just really sad. And that was kind of empowering the nothing. And so I was kind of like spending all this time saying, focusing on what is wrong with these people in Texas? They don't like, come on, it's just snow. Like right. that's where I was.
right.
You know, and not really focus on realizing that the infrastructure was disproportionately affecting so many people. And it's just like such a, like what a metaphor. These people in I think in Houston, in the expanded Houston city limits were looking up at the skyscrapers that still had power while the rest of the people on the ground didn't. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's just, it's very telling. I have a girlfriend, Cynthia Lee Fontaine, who was also on RuPaul's Drag Race, who's supposed to be a guest on my podcast 2 nights ago. And she was like, girl, I can't be on the show because my house is going to collapse because it snowed. And I was like, girl, a likely story. I was like, it snows here all the time. And then I'm looking on the news and it actually is happening.
Right, right. You know, and it's interesting because, first of all, I had to be honest with you both, and this is, you know, I'm a failure in one respect, which is that I've literally never once thought about Texas's power grid. This is the first time I have really delved into it. But it turns out that when you have a like a Lone Star power grid that's not connected to other shit, they can't help you when you're in a pickle. Right. And so one of Biden's plans is to actually nationalize the power grid, which, again, it's interesting. I think one thing about the Biden administration's rhetoric around climate change has been there isn't an area of governance that isn't affected by climate change. And this is a really great example of that. Right. Like the power grid in Texas, I didn't realize would be affected by climate change. You don't think of it necessarily that way, but it's not it wasn't built to sustain snowstorms and it's not connected to other states. So it can't be bailed out in a situation like this. My big question, I guess, Adam, is for people like who are, I mean, I don't even know if a climate change denialists are important to think about, but just for people who are just sort of casually and indifferently living their lives where climate change is like a thing they never think about, but they don't deny it.
Yeah.
What do we do? Like, how do we change? And you have a show, right? You talk about issues. In what way would you use your, do you use your powers and would you use your powers to communicate to these people?
Sure. Well, I think that it's, you know, climate change is an issue that we have this sort of very abstract notion of, you know, and our frankly, our cultural conversation about it is a couple decades behind the science. You know, it was barely, this was the first presidential election where it was even a major issue. You know, it was barely discussed in previous debates. And thank God Biden is prioritizing it so much as an issue. But in terms of how the average person thinks about it, we're stuck in the past. We all think in our heart of hearts, like, okay, climate change, how do I stop that? I guess I got to stop using so much plastic. I need to keep the lights off more. You know, like that's what we're
thinking. No hairspray.
It's like, yeah, no hairspray. It's like Peppermint said, oh, you got to not watch TV. You gotta save power, right? And the fact is, A, that whole point of view was pushed upon us by corporations that were trying to unload the responsibility onto the individual, you know, to
say,
you know, like it's not us who's creating all the plastic and all the disposables. It's you. You need to recycle it. And that's how we'll improve the world. Right. So the first thing is that individual choice is never going to be enough to stop climate change. Us buying better stuff and us using less things is never going to be enough to stop climate change, nor is it possible to ask people to make sacrifices like that, right? But here's the second part. Solving climate change does not actually equal making sacrifices. That's the idea that we've been having our whole, oh, we got to cut back. We got to use less. Life has to be shittier for us to solve climate change. Not true. I just had a guest on my podcast, this guy, Saul Griffith, on my podcast, Factually. Plug.
do you mean the hit podcast, Factually?
The hit podcast, Factually. And no, I didn't ask you to call it that. You just know it's a hit. And that's why you call it that naturally. You know it's a hit podcast. So we had this fella on, MacArthur Genius Grant winner, engineer, scientist, Saul Griffith. And what he explained is that if we were to electrify our entire power grid, right? Electrify cars, electrify oil, electrify natural gas, and put the right policies in place, that would mean that energy would be cheaper. It would be more abundant and life would be better because we'd have less pollutants in our homes. We'd live longer, you know? And so it costs money and time and most importantly, political will to do this. You have to be willing to say, piss off the local natural gas supplier like SoCalGas here in California, which is lobbying against, you know, making, you know, rules that would mean that, you know, new homes would have to be constructed with electrical heat instead of gas, right? Because they're a gas company. They don't want that business to be taken. taken away. So we need to be able to stand up to those sorts of utilities. But once we do, life gets better for everybody. We, in fact, don't have to cut back. We can have more good things in our world. And so that's the sort of paradigm shift that we need in our understanding of how to fight climate change. It's not about cutting back. It's about entering into a better future and making investments that will allow us to do so.
Yeah, I love that. And you're right that, like, you know, the side that wants us to keep fossil fuels, they sort of put, you know, put these stories in our heads that it's about self-sacrifice to make it unpopular, right? They're not they're not like, you know, do your part. But I do still think that people should do their part. I Googled...
Recycle and don't like overuse shit, but don't think that once you've put your shit in the blue bin, you've done your part. Right.
Right.
Doing your part is also yelling at politicians, voting, telling your friends.
And also thinking about the kind of changing the energy infrastructure. It's a little bit like when I had to change my laundry machine, guys. It was just like collecting water. It was doing, you know, it was leaking. I let it go for a long time where I was just like bailing water out of a laundry machine. And I knew that I needed to buy a new one. I hemmed and I hawed. I didn't feel like dealing with it, but then I dealt with it. And guess what? I don't have to bail water out of my laundry machine anymore. By the way, admitting that you have a laundry machine is such a New York City
so
brag.
Bougie.
I'm
oh
so
my gosh.
Sorry.
Did you
I
just
know.
Call me poor?
I know. But here's okay. So I did one of these things where I Googled how do you get red state people to buy into climate change. You know when you ask Google like just a ridiculous question.
Oh, I ask it all the time.
And I found this really great article in Scientific American, and it's from like 2017 or whatever. But they surveyed like 11 mayors in the Northern Plain, in the Great Plain states, talking about how do you talk to your constituents about climate change, and they just don't. They basically try not to use the term climate change. You know, they use other things. They frame it as a conservation. They frame it as money savings through energy savings, smart growth and planning, common sense, natural resource management. These are all terms they use. So I think we also maybe just to like popularize some of these efforts, stop talking about climate change because it's such a loaded term for the right. If we just start saying, oh, there's snowstorms in Texas now, so you need to nationalize your grid without like saying all the other stuff, that might also help. You know, just some basic sort of marketing around around climate change might help the problem.
Yeah, sort of like when it went from save the ozone layer to climate change.
Well, here's the thing. We did save the ozone layer.
Yeah, that
did you
was
know
actually
that?
Worked, that one.
It worked. Like that.
Yeah, but the problem was, it, like you said, Adam, it was all pinned on consumerism, which is like the platform of this capitalist society that we're in. And so it felt like the responsibility was, which are you going to drink Diet Coke out of a bottle or a can, or are you going to use hairspray? But then you have all the magazines telling you you must use hairspray because you have to look beautiful or you're not a woman, and you better be drinking Diet Coke because it's on every commercial. What are we going to do?
But the funny thing is, the ozone layer then, it was popular with Reagan or whatever. I think I might be talking.
I know I'm old. I'm aging myself. I'm poor and old.
But I think, Pepiner and I are far, far, far too young to know anything about Ronald Reagan. But the interesting thing is conservation at its very core is easily a conservative ideal, you know, so it can easily be spun in that direction. Folks, we got to wrap this segment there, but I want to know from you guys, what do you, you know, how do you talk about climate change with people who may not think it's a big deal? And I'm talking about the indifferent types, the deniers, they're in a whole other bucket and I don't need to worry about them. But I'm curious to know what kind of messaging you use just in your family around this stuff. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about some not great guys. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app. And I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness
like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level if you think about it. Just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's pros.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And we are back, and we're ready with topic number two. So this weekend, the Senate voted to acquit Donnie for his role in the January 6th insurrection, which was a surprise to no one, and yet it was still a surprise. You know who seemed disappointed? Actually, maybe the most disappointed was Mitch McConnell. This is what he said. He said in a speech, he said, "There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day." He said, this was an intensifying crescendo of conspiracy theories orchestrated by an ongoing president who seemed determined to either overturn the voters' decision or else torch our institutions on the way out. Mitch McConnell was also one of the people who voted to acquit. So my first question to both of you is, Peppermint, why did Mitch McConnell do that if he also thinks that Trump was responsible?
He was communicating to us that he still needed to swing from the nuts of, as you put it, Donnie. You know, I mean, he's got a stranglehold. Trump has got a stranglehold on the Republican voters, and therefore a stranglehold on the politicians who need those voters' votes. And so there, it's quite a conundrum. And, you know, his morality was in question, and he was trying to choose between right and wrong. And he decided not to make a decision. He decided to vote. That's a decision. But he decided to, you know, vote one way and speak another way so that he could kind of try to stay in the middle. But there is no middle ground with Trump, and there shouldn't be a middle ground with this issue.
Adam, are you impressed by McConnell's courage?
self-preservation? Let's hear it.
This is what Mitch McConnell does. You know, he's a very canny politician. He's a very cynical politician. I think it's from his perspective, probably the smart move. What he does is he finds the middle ground position to give everybody in his caucus cover. So they were all there. They all know that he provoked it, but they need to find some argument that'll allow them to have it both ways. And so the idea that the impeachment was unconstitutional because he's no longer in office allows them to have this sort of like legalistic opt out. But then he goes and gives a big speech in order to say, no, I'm really not okay with this. Right. In order to have it both ways, in order to chastise the president. And I don't know. I actually kind of see it as, so first of all, it's not brave. It's not cowardly. It's just that's what Mitch McConnell does, you know, and I tend to not look at politicians in that way of going, here's what they should do if they were like decent people. It's like, you know, politicians
they're
in
not
a lot of cases.
People.
Yeah, they're not. They're political actors. They act according to what the politics of the situation are and what they think is going to benefit them. Right. And what I'll say is, this is the most that the Republican Congress has ever distanced itself from Trump, right? We have seen that happen. Seven Republicans voted against him, voted to convict him. And you have to wonder, we don't really have numbers, but how many of them voted no because of Mitch McConnell's little, you know, loophole that he came up with where they said, oh, I disapprove, but I think it's unconstitutional, right? And that is the party moving away from Trump just a little bit more than it was before, right? Like now all the Trump fans, they already hated Mitch McConnell. Now they really fucking hate Mitch McConnell, and they really hate Mitt Romney, and they hate all the other Republicans who voted no but agree with Mitch McConnell, you know? And so I don't think that's as distant as I would be from Trump, or I would want a person to be from Trump. But I do think it shows like a growing schism in the party because, you know, a year ago, McConnell never would have done this. He would have just offended Trump. So, you know, I think it's not as much movement as you might expect given the events of the day, but it is some movement if you're just looking at, you know, the objective reality of how much the, you know, minority leader felt he needed to
but move the question away from is her. It's is it enough movement, because we are in a situation, you know, the 2022 is right around the corner essentially, and all, you know, after all of the stalling and all of the, you know, after the impeachment trial and Biden not being able to get staffed up the way that he would have wanted to, mm-hmm. you know, is it enough movement away from Trump, who is like this looming ghostly figure who's like threatening everybody and spooking them in at night, when what they need to do is either, at the end of the day, they're going to need to completely sever ties with him, or just go ahead and say, he's our man, he runs the show. It's one of those two things. I hate to be so binary, but it's got to be one of those two things. And it's going to take a few years to get there.
It's weird because he is trying to do, like, he's trying to have it both ways, where he wants... where his vote can't be used, and it's not about him because he's not going to run again. It doesn't matter. But he needs to raise money for the party, right? He needs to raise money for other people that are going to run. He's got to try and get the, you know, Republican Party back in control. So this is about raising money, and it's also about getting people to not primary pre-existing GOP officials. So there, it's all about that. And then the thing that I think is the big, big fat miscalculation is that McConnell thinks popular opinion is formed by popular opinion, but he forgets that leadership also forms popular opinion, right?
Right.
Like, if he was a leader, he could have gotten 17 other people to vote against acquittal, and then they would have really excised Trump from the party, and then they would have also maybe sent a message that, like, we are going to fight against this tumor that's growing on the Republican Party. What instead he's doing is this, like, half thing where there is no real leadership. It only creates a void. It creates more. It just makes the void more available and accessible to the Trump wing of the party.
I think that's canny analysis. And I think I want to piggyback on what Peppermint said. You're right. It is a binary. They got to go one way or the other at the end of the day. And what this does is it delays the decision on which way they're going to go, because it basically reestablishes the Trump wing and the establishment wing of the party, where there used to just be one group, and now they're against each other. I mean, McConnell has said he's going to campaign against, you know, Trumpist Senate candidates who might want a primary establishment candidate. So it keeps up that, you know, it creates and perpetuates like a war within the Republican Party in a way that might not be. Now, look, I don't know. I'm not a political pundit, and I think political punditry is stupid, but it does make the overall Republican Party look pretty weak to me. And it's funny because after Election Day, I was like, oh, man, like, Biden won, but the Republicans won every single other part of the democracy. They kept their Senate majority. They gained seats in the House. They won all the state houses and everything. And, like, it looks like Trump kind of won. He lost the presidency, but he won everything else. But then after they were swept out of Georgia, and after the, you know, the events at the Capitol, it really looks like the opposite. Trump is not even on Twitter anymore. Like, we barely hear from the guy. He had to issue a press release the other day.
Which, by the way, how much gentler did that press release land in your, like, Twitter feed than a Trump tweet? Like, that, because he said something, you know, anti Mitch McConnell. I can't even really quote it. I don't remember. But he basically said, like, Mitch McConnell is trash or whatever. But it was, like, totally unmemorable. It wasn't. I think the fact that he doesn't have access to Twitter just really makes the language that he's using and all that stuff, it just gets filtered in a way that the press should filter language. You know what I mean? Should kind of curate what
we hear. And the new CEO of Parler has entered the chat.
I mean, have you ever had an enemy, someone who you really didn't get along with, a frenemy or an enemy, quit social media? Has this ever happened to you? And it's happened to me, where they're like, you know what? Like, I see this person's post, I'm like, oh my God, they make me crazy. Like, and then they quit social media, and you're like, oh my, they're gone. I never even have to think about them anymore. Like, they're living their life somewhere. They're still having all
so
their bad
So does that mean
opinions.
We're delusional? That they're, because we know he's still there. And, you know, I mean, Meghan McCain put it, you know, my resource for all things Republican politics. Meghan McCain said that it's like one of those movies where Godzilla is under the water and, you know, the people are in their boats and all happy, but Godzilla is still there. So she's referring to Trump as like Godzilla about to come and ravage the Republican Party again. And so I don't know. I'm afraid. Is it that the devil you know better than the devil you don't? I don't really know. I'm happy to not see him and feel like we have to hang on. He's not forcing us to hang on to his every word on Twitter, which is what we were doing when he was on Twitter. But now we're hanging on to his, like, his essence and talking about him.
It's,
you know,
still
all
so
of his
soon,
actions.
Though. Like, the acquittal just happened on Saturday.
It was a week ago. You're
like,
right.
You know, I feel like give us a month and we're going to be like, I'm sorry, who are you talking about? Donnie, what? It just won't. Yeah. I'm optimistic. Fun fact, though, about Meghan McCain. I was up for a job where it was like me and, I don't know, a couple of other people up for this job. But so it was down to just a couple of names. And the person who got it was Meghan McCain.
Wow.
Were you going to be on The View?
No, it wasn't for The View. It was for another show. And okay. But I think it's hilarious that you're like, who do I get? Do I get Nagin Farsad or Meghan McCain? They're so similar. I can't decide.
That is I
want to
know what that job was.
I mean, it's so ridiculous.
I'm just gonna imagine that you were up to be on The View, and I'm just going to picture that, and that's what I'm going to think about. I don't need to know what this other job is. Nagin was almost on The View.
I was almost on The View, and anyways, it would have been a completely different looking situation.
Yes, it would have.
Let's talk quickly about Adam Kinzinger as someone who Peppermint is making the choice, right? Like, he is, for those of you who don't know, he's a House Republican who supported impeachment. And a couple days later, I just thought this was so fucking crazy and interesting. 11 members of his family sent him a handwritten 2-page letter telling him that he was working with, quote, the devil's army, and, quote, oh my, what a disappointment you are to us and to God. And, quote, you have embarrassed the Kinzinger family name, exclamation mark. So that is a, so Adam Kinzinger was not embraced by his family for standing up to Trump. He also started a new PAC because he's trying to reform the party. He's really explicit about it. He's really vocal about it. He wants the party to go back to the days of George W. Bush, where they emphasize lower taxes, hawkish defense, and social conservatism. I mean, what do you think of his mission?
I mean, this shows how powerful identity is in politics. You know, Ezra Klein wrote about this in his last book, that like when people say, as liberals often do, how come the conservatives can't see reason? How come they can't accept climate change? How come they love Donald Trump so much? Why can't they change their minds, right? So much of the pressure is social. If you've built your entire career on saying climate change isn't real, right? Or if you have built your career on, you know, affiliating yourself with Trump and you try to change as a matter of principle, you could be excommunicated from your family, right? I mean, if you imagine like, you know, yourself in your own life, if you chose one of your most deeply held views that everyone else around you held and you said, oh, I'm going to be convinced that the opposite is true, the same might happen to you, right? And that would be very personally painful to you in like a really rational human way. It's like a lot to ask of someone to alienate your family and your friends and your community and the people who work with you. Like that would be, that is almost too much for most people to do. So I think it's very sad.
It takes a lot. It takes a lot, yeah.
I think it's very sad, yeah. And I think it shows why not more, like, if you wonder why won't more Republicans distance themselves from Trump, it's because they love their families. You know, like, I understand it.
I mean, but like, it's not the people who do distance themselves from Trump love their families as well. And it really is kind of, I mean, you're right. It's really sad. But it is unusual that these people would be willing to handwrite a letter What? It's 2021. What is this?
I know, that detail was so interesting.
Handwrite, how many hours do you think it took for them to write that letter? Handwrite, because you know if they mess up, it was an ink. If they mess up, they had to start again.
You have to start. You're not going to have like crossed out things in a letter that important. No.
Yeah, you can't. And so handwrite this letter to let the whole world, and then make copies of it to send to other people in the legislature to let them know, look what we did. It really does seem kind of extreme. And it just shows that, like, they view Trump as this sort of deity and God. And I don't think that that's healthy either.
Ever. You know? I mean, because it's interesting because I guess I don't remember how people how they embraced George W. Bush, but I don't
not
remember.
Like that.
Yeah, I don't remember it being a deity type thing. I don't remember mm-hmm. this cult of personality around him. I no. remember just being like, oh, they're really into conservative policies like those espoused by George W. Bush, but I didn't remember very much. You know, this is a different feeling, and it's very strange because, you know, one of the things that Adam Kinzinger said was that, you know, his family members were brainwashed by the churches they attend. And I just thought that's so interesting because I don't even, you know, I can't imagine getting because I can't imagine an actual institution who's in the service of a deity then espousing Trump as a deity, you know what I mean, in deity like terms. I find that very shocking, but I think that makes it, you're right, Adam, so much harder to come out because, like, who wants to get letters like that? Also, it's really hard to read other people's handwriting. I mean, that was the first fucking dilemma.
Yeah, when you sent that, I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to try to read this thing.
I mean, Jesus Christ, give me an hour.
Though, do you think that it's going to, like, where does Kinzinger go and call home? Not like for like Thanksgiving, you know, he's not coming to my house. But do you think that it's important to politically to embrace these folks or just let them fight and squabble and see who comes out?
No,
bloody?
I think they got to figure out if they're going to form a new party. Like, because he's, you know, he's against the Affordable Care Act. He's an opponent of abortion rights. He wants to increase taxes. He's against increased taxes for any reason. He won his first seat in Congress with Sarah Palin's endorsement. So this guy is not like an Elizabeth Warren type. You know what I mean? Like, he's not. So I don't love this. What I think he is just like what would have been an exceedingly regular, boring Republican circa 2005, right? He just would have been like, oh yeah, just like another Republican dude. That's all he is. There's really...
And the biggest headline would have been, oh my God, he got caught, you know, with another man having sex in a bathroom under a stall. Like, that would have been
exactly. And instead, the scandal is a handwritten letter.
I think we just need to see what happens. Like, is he able, like, so he's on this endeavor. We need to create a Republican Party apart from Trump. And we'll see if he gets a following and if people in the Republican Party want that. And if they don't and he is kicked out of the party, you know, I mean, like we saw in the 2016 election, there were anti-Trump Republicans. There was like that Evan McMullen guy in Utah like that. And they gave it a shot and they fucking lost. Like, that's what
I guess
happens.
They'll join the Lincoln Party, the Lincoln Project.
I mean,
yeah, I mean,
we'll have to
see.
Yeah, and he is right. I mean, he has actually raised money in this pack. So it's not, you know, what he's doing isn't like without teeth. So we'll keep you abreast of what's happening with Adam Kinzinger and our really good buddy, Mitch McConnell. In the meantime, we're going to move on to topic number 3. So we read a piece in The Atlantic called The Type of Love That Makes People Happiest by Arthur C. Brooks. And in it, he writes, this is, I think, the summation of his piece. He writes, research shows that being married only accounts for 2% of subjective well-being later in life. The important thing for well-being is relationship satisfaction. And that depends on what psychologists call companionate love. Love based less on passionate highs and lows and more on stable affection, mutual understanding, and commitment. So my question for you both is, what do you What do you understand to be companionate love? And do you agree with this piece?
Companionate love is knowing that I will always have a very dependable, strong bond with the flavor of ice cream in my freezer. That's And it's always there for me, right. No matter what.
Right. You can find, right. So your argument is you can find companionate love in other places.
You can. And honestly, like, in all seriousness, this is something that, you know, I mean, I think all humans, especially these days and this day and age, in this age of technology, deal with this relationships and, you know, connection, a lack of connection to other people. That's obviously something that we all deal with. But culturally, you know, queer people have been... are unfortunately well versed in the Kinzinger family brand of rejection, where there's a letter and you're excommunicated from everything. Especially trans women, you know, being shut out of not only family spaces but public spaces, places of employment, and socially, and just kind of being ostracized. And that has an effect on the relationships that we're able to cultivate, particularly our romantic relationships. And it also, I believe, is a big reason why the majority of, from what we know, the majority of the murders that are committed, and the murders of trans women, specifically trans women of color, are usually committed at the hands of our lovers, our intimate partners. Mm-hmm. And they're not killing us because they want to, they would like to kill us. You know, it's that they would rather kill us than have anyone else know. And so that's obviously a little bit of a different story. But what ends up happening is so many of us, many of the women that I know, when in the absence of a good companion who's loving and affectionate and in a healthy way, we kind of form these chosen families. These, you know, some people call them houses, some people call them chosen families, sisterhoods, these bonds with others in our community that are also going through the same thing. And I think that's ultimately the best and most healthy way to have companionship, given the circumstances.
I think, Peppermint, you make a great point there, because one of the things that Brooks writes about in this article is that, you know, married people, and this is from a study, married people aged 22 to 79 who said they had at least two close friends, meaning at least one besides their spouse, had higher levels of life satisfaction and self-esteem. So the idea is that is not even necessarily that the idea here is that your spouse is your best friend, or you could just have two best friends. You know what I mean? I think, like, I don't know if you could swap out one for the other, but according to the sociologist, but I think in terms of, like, building community, you could have that same kind of companionate effect. Adam, did companionate love ring true for you in this piece?
Yeah. I mean, I've been with my partner Lisa we've been together 12 years, and this does ring true as, like, you know, where is it in the piece here, the well-being benefits of marriage are much greater for those who also regard their spouse as their best friend. Now, we're not married, but we do regard each other as our best friends, I think, and I would absolutely say that contributes to my feeling of well-being. You know, most of your time with your partner, you're not fucking most of the time. You know what I mean? You're not like, oh, blah, blah, blah,
hey,
blah,
speak
blah,
for yourself.
Well, no, we have this. I think what Adam means is you're not fucking your spouse most of the time.
You're fucking other people?
You might be fucking someone else, but not your spouse.
We're disgustingly faithful. You'd be disappointed.
I didn't mean you. I didn't mean to imply you.
But most of the time you're watching movies and you're saying, what do you want to get for dinner? And you're talking about a book you read, you know? And so, like, the fact that this is just going to sound really gross and cliche, but we would never run out of shit to talk about. You know, we always have more to talk about, which is a characteristic of a friend, not a passionate lover. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, I think the challenge is we deprioritize that kind of love, that kind of friendship for marriage in our society. We think it's supposed to be passionate.
Steamy, you know, yeah.
Yeah, the first 2 years are what the rest of the relationship is supposed to be like. And then you feel guilty. You're like, oh, why aren't we so horny anymore? Why aren't we always just like, you know, blushing and quivering at each other's touch? And why aren't we constantly a Twitter? And like, well, I'm reading this article. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what happens the first couple of years. And then you have a different sort of relationship. And then you sort of need to maybe work at the passionate piece a little bit more and make sure you're making time and space and doing that with intention. But, you know, I think a lot of people feel guilty that they are like, she's like my best friend. Is that bad? And like, oh, reading this, like, no, that's good. Right. That's wonderful.
I think, you know, it's funny. I had some days where I dated a ton of men, and I dated a guy who was living. I may have mentioned this on the show before. I don't remember, but I dated a dude who was living in Dublin, and I was living in London for a minute because I'm so international.
Wow, international.
And I have a passport. It's fine. And I was dating this guy living in Dublin, but then I moved to New York, and we were still dating, and it wasn't even real dating because we would meet up in some city and we would have a passionate weekend. But it was a real roller coaster, and I thought that the roller coaster of it made it real love. You know what I mean? It was the opposite of companion love. It was just about confusion and, you know, and will they, won't they? And what city are they going to meet in? Like, what it was, you know, and we were broke. So we were just like putting flights on credit cards and being ridiculous, you know, and it was really about that. And that is totally unsustainable. You know what I mean? It is a great, like, interesting experience, right? Yeah, but it was totally unsustainable. And he was an Irish man that did write poetry, but I think that in the long term, I wouldn't be like fucking. It's like that stuff in the poetry, whatever, in the romance is just so. It's so restricted to, like, it's almost like going to Six Flags. You know what I mean? It's just like that. It's like you're going, you know, I'm going to stand in this line, get a poem. I'm going to stand in this line. You know, we're going to bone all night in Barcelona. And then I'm going to, you know, it was completely nothing like the relationship I have now, right, which is more stable, where the topic of conversation is that, you know, they started using cloth bags at East Village Organic, where we do some shopping. You know what I mean? It's like, that's, we'll talk 20 minutes about how they changed their bags. And I love that, right? Because who else am I going to talk 20 minutes about the bags of a particular market? And so I do think there's something to that. Have you ever was there a point in your life, Peppermint, where you kind of made the distinction between like the exciting kind of romance and the stable one?
Yes. First of all, I swear we dated the same person. I also dated an Irishman who was a poet, and we would travel around, meet each other in rendezvous.
Oh my God.
And yes, I swear, what is going on in Ireland, in Dublin? And so, yes, that's why I was gagging when you started telling that story.
Yeah, I know. I saw your face. I was just like, what? Yeah, that's hilarious. But I think, you know what, listeners, if you ever had a steamy situation with an Irishman, please hit me up. You are not alone.
So, we got to get to the bottom of this.
I can't believe I'm just remembering this. I was in Edinburgh one summer.
Did you date him too?
It's the wrong country, but yeah, same guy.
It's funny you say that. Many, you know, the follow-up to that kind of instance that I was mentioning earlier, especially in the life of a humble trans woman like myself, is that, you know, there's no shortage of gentlemen callers who want to hang around. And, you know, I wrote a song about it. You know, my time is taken up full of exciting flings that are just like, woo, woo, woo. And, you know, then at the end of the day, I realized that these people have like, you know, the song is called Best Sex. These people have the best sex, but they have nothing else to offer. I don't want to talk to them. There are no other redeeming qualities to these people. And so I do think that it's important to have that friendship and connection. And one of the things that I think we end up searching for so much is this love, this passion, this love. And one of the notions that, you know, I don't know if I heard it somewhere or if it just occurred to me or both, probably both, is that, you know, that I remind myself of is that love is not enough. It's just not enough.
Right.
For an, you know.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, that kind of, you know, yeah, knee shaking love is not enough. It really has to come down to like joy out of some mundane situations that you want to experience with that other person. I think that's what it comes down to for me.
Yeah, it's like Doritos are great. You know what I mean? Doritos are very intense taste experience. Yes! They're an explosion in your mouth. I wouldn't want to live without Doritos. You can't eat nothing but Doritos. No. You need, because guess what? Doritos aren't going to make you full. You eat Doritos all day, you're going to be like, I'm still hungry. You know, you need to have the other piece of it. Now, if all you're eating is boiled soup is, you know, or whatever, is gruel.
You can't, like, yeah, I need you some can't Doritos do that either.
Too. You gotta have both of them.
And I also think the point about having like a, you know, this kind of companionate love, but then also having a good other friend and good, you know, in this article, they talk about having two close friends, but like, I think having friends just sort of like you, I think the notion that you get everything you need from one person is crazy. I've long found that to be crazy. Like, I, you know, I get many things that I need from my husband. He's fucking fantastic. But I get like a shit ton of other things from my friends, you know, like, and if I don't have them, if I don't see them, like, you know, I'd start jonesing for it. You know what I mean? Like, I have to see my friends and talk to my friends or else it's like, I'm not complete, you know? So I do think the idea that you would be kind of getting everything from one person is crazy.
Well, and you know, one thing that I've read and talked about my own work is that older men are facing an epidemic of loneliness. This is like, that sounds like a joke, but like loneliness.
So are women.
I know that they are. I know they are.
Less so women, according to the data.
A specific problem that older men have in the data, like men my dad's age. My dad is like close to 70, and he's never going to listen to this. He doesn't have a friend. Yeah. Like, he has a wonderful relationship with my mom, but like, I don't think he has a friend he hangs out with, and he's doing very well. But that kind of loneliness, men have trouble making non-romantic relationships with other men when they get older in life. And loneliness is really strongly correlated with early death from heart disease and other things. Like, it's just being, you know, we're social animals. Being lonely is very bad for you. And that's what that made me think of, is that like, that's something that men in particular, because of our cultural expectations of men or whatever else, have a hard time cultivating in their lives. And it's actually bad for your health.
I also think that, kind of to add on to what you said, Adam, is that culturally, I think we have an issue with platonic relationships in general. I think that we think of platonic relationships as just something that's either fleeting or just for kids or young people. But, you know, I think men, I would probably argue that men of all ages have a problem sustaining healthy platonic relationships with women that they don't want to have sex with necessarily, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. And I think, and it's funny because I think one of the things I talk to a lot, because Adam, my parents are in a similar age range. And one of the things that kind of happens a lot in my friends, you know, brunch conversation is my is my friends worrying about whether or not their parents have enough friends. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a constant refrain of this concern. Like, do they get enough social interaction? Do they have enough people, that just care for them, like, and, want to chat or whatever. And it is, I find that, that's a stressor. And it's interesting because it's like your children also stress out about whether or not you have friends. So go and make some friends so your children don't have to stress out about it.
Yeah.
It's something, it's gotten worse. I mean, look, it's also a sign of the times. It's a part of the way cities developed. It's a part of the driving culture. It's a part of, I mean, there's so many reasons that this kind of thing might be happening. But I also think there are still so many ways to kind of correct it and to have those older late in life friendships. That's a thing. They happen.
People have this weird expectation that their kids are going to keep them company. People are like, I got to have kids because I'll be lonely when I'm old. It's like, your kids aren't going to hang out with you. They're going to have their own lives when you're old. You need to make friends with other old people. That's what's going to stop you from being lonely.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've been like, Mom, I have to go. And I feel so guilty about it. She's like bringing up all these dumb things to talk about.
Oh, my God. Okay, so everybody, call your parents and also help them find some friends. That is, I guess, how I'm closing out this section on love. And also, thank you so much to listeners who have been writing. We talked about dating during the pandemic last week. It's been a stretch of love for 2 weeks. And people have been writing in such really beautiful stories about how they've been dating in the pandemic. Some people have been on, have done Zoom dates and then they met in person. They decided to get tested and then meet in person. And some people, there's a story of someone, meeting a dog, meeting somebody while they're walking their dog. And then now they're together. Someone who was who got pregnant and had a baby all during the pandemic. There's some really, really like touching stories. Love is not dead despite this fuckball pandemic. So I was so happy to get those. Keep them coming. Okay, and now that we're going to close the show, my last question to you both is, are either of you Catholic, observant Catholics?
No.
Me neither.
I can't say that I am.
Okay, great. You're like, I'm not sure, but I think no. I'm a Muzz. So this does not apply to any of us, but Lent is here. And my question for you is, if you did observe, I like the idea of giving up something. If you did have to give up something for whatever, what is it, 40 days, what would you give up? And I guess it's part of the idea is that it's a little painful. What would you give up?
What do we have to give up? Isn't it mostly food related?
I mean, I think you can, in my universe of Lent, you can give up anything like tweeting or, whatever. It could be anything.
Oh, so I already quit tweeting.
Did you really quit tweeting?
I have Twitter blocked on most of my devices, and then I use a service called Buffer to post when I'm without opening
Twitter.
When
you need Twitter. I use Buffer,
I've never heard of that.
I use Buffer,
that
and then
brilliant.
I open Twitter and look at it.
So this week I've been bad. This week I've been bad. Mostly I try to only look once a week to check my DMs and to name search myself and see if anything's come up.
See if that scandal is unfolding without you knowing.
Did they find out? I try to stay off Twitter. I'm constantly quitting things. I was playing too much online Magic the Gathering, so I quit that, and now I'm on to Tetris. I've been playing a lot of Tetris, so I guess I'd give up Tetris next.
I've given up cooking.
What?
You give up cooking?
Yeah, which I was never really doing to begin with, but I keep subscribing to these damned delivery service Freshly and Sunbasket I was like, and I'm like, what I have, I keep throwing out all this
packaging.
Chicken breast and packets. Right. I'm like, I can't with this stuff. And so I subscribed again two weeks ago, and then I immediately went in. They allow you to skip weeks. I immediately went in and skipped 15 weeks. So that showed me I should cancel this and let it be done for good. I did start with a new meal service because I don't like shopping at the grocery store. I got a new meal service and the meals are already cooked and you just pop them in the microwave or the oven and you're good to go and they're delicious.
That's such and a specific thing to give up. Meal kit, prep, whatever those are called, cooking programs. I think so. If I wanted to give up something that would be like a little difficult, but I probably should try, is I would give up coffee. I love coffee. And I think I maybe, you know, addicted is a ridiculous word, but like, you know, I'm very psychologically dependent on it. I don't even know if it really affects me physiologically like that much, but I just like the ceremony of it. I'm just like, oh, I need to do it so that my day starts. But that seems crazy that my day should, you know, like my day is starting. Either way, it's starting, you know? Why? All right, folks, what I would really love is for people to follow both of you and what you do. Adam Conover, where do they do that?
Well, check out my podcast, again, Factually. It's a hit podcast, it's so if you're not listening to it, you're the one missing out. check it out. Incredible. We have incredible interviews with experts and smart people who share their ideas with you in a fast and funny way. You follow me at Adam Conover wherever you get your social media. I've been on TikTok a lot lately.
And Peppermint, where do people follow you?
Absolutely. You can follow me on social media, Peppermint247, everywhere. You can also listen to my new show called Pep Talks Black Movie Classics, where we talk about all of the black movie classics with celebrities. Our next guest is John Cameron Mitchell. And you can also listen to my new album called A Girl Like Me, Letters to My Lovers that you plugged earlier. Thank you so much. I'm getting ready to release the short film version of all the music videos. Instead of doing single music videos, we put them together in a short film. And that comes out
next month.
I'm excited about that. We don't have a release date, but it's going to premiere on Out TV.
That, I am so excited about that. Please follow both of these wonderful people. You will not regret it. And I want to thank the production team here at Fake the Nation for making the show possible. That's our wonderful producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gabi Altarora theme music, and Lily Fleshler helps with research. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. So send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005. Or you can drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher. Follow us on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Pandora, and the SiriusXM app. And do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps more people find out about the show. That is real. I will be back in your earballs next week.